Legislation aimed at curbing violence during police stops has drawn criticism from some civil rights activists. The new instructions are to appear in the DMV driver's handbook that should be out in a few weeks. Lawmakers say they hope the new language would prevent misunderstandings between police and drivers. But civil liberties advocates say the new guidelines aren't clear enough about motorists' rights. Joining us now is Daniel House. He's chief of police in Wrightsville Beach. He's also second vice president of the North Carolina Chiefs of Police, and he's been appointed to Governor Cooper's Crime Commission. He joins us now from partner station WHQR in Wilmington. Chief House, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
It's very good to have you here. Tell us about this new language, because I know you had a part in designing this. What's behind this, and what is the hope that this new language is? What's the aim of this language?
Well, the Chiefs Association was involved. We got involved early on after Representative Faircloth introduced the bill, and they had asked us our opinion as far as, you know, what would be good to let drivers know and what to expect when they're pulled over by a police officer. And so our goal was really to draft something that would, you know, let people know what was going to happen when they were pulled over, what to expect, and give them instructions on what they should do. And hopefully that would de-escalate any type of situation that happened on a traffic stop.
Obviously, the impetus behind this is the recent police violence that has we've experienced in shootings at traffic stops, and so some effort to curb the violence that we've seen recently, which is on the upswing.
Exactly. We went back actually and looked at not only national incidents where we had some confrontation between a driver and the law enforcement, but we also looked at local examples where there was maybe a use of force incident came out of it, or there was a complaint that came out of it. And what we were really looking for is what was that point in that situation that caused things to go awry. And one of the two things we found is either one, that it was on the part of the police officer was maybe rude, condescending, you know, or short with somebody or disrespectful, and that escalated it. We also found on the other side of the fence was that the driver a lot of times was rude, noncompliant, somewhere along that line. So what we were really trying to do is find a happy medium to where, you know, that we can bridge that gap and hopefully keep that type of situation from happening again.
So tell us about this new language. What should we do?
Well, locally here in Wilmington, what we did is we put together a campaign with the local sheriff and the local police chiefs. It was a public service campaign, and it was called Listen, Explain, Comply, and Complain. And the point of it being was that we were going to teach the police officers that they should listen to what the, you know, when the driver gets pulled over, listen to what they have to say, because a lot of people, sometimes people may not know or really want to know why they were stopped, to listen to what their concerns were, and then take the time from law enforcement perspective to explain exactly what they're going to, what, you know, what happened and what they're going to do. And as part of that, we ask that the violator or the, you know, the driver to comply with the officer, regardless of whether they agreed with the ticket or didn't agree with the ticket, or agreed with the violation or didn't. And then if they felt like they were treated unfairly or they felt like the ticket wasn't just, is to go back and complain to the police department. And we were hoping with you know, the cooperation not only with the public and the cooperation of the police officers, that we could not have that happen anymore, to where there was a, you know, something that turned into a violent situation or use force situation. We felt like that would help to curb it.
You talked about this being public service announcement. How much of that has made its way into the language or this new language that will appear in the DMV manuals?
It has. I don't know exactly the wording that will be in there, but I know the suggestions that we made. The Chiefs Association made this a statewide campaign. We did public service announcements across the state where we put out through the local police chiefs. And so we certainly wanted to have that input put in there, you know, making it a shared responsibility, not only between the public, but with law enforcement to make that happen. So I think you're going to see that in the verbiage.
We're talking about upcoming changes to the DMV handbook that explains how we should act during a traffic stop. The North Carolina Civil Liberties Union has expressed concern about the new language. Susanna Birdsong is a policy counsel for the North Carolina ACLU and recently penned a letter to the DMV. Susanna, welcome to State of Things.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Tell me about your concerns about this new language.
Sure. So one of the big things that we do at the ACLU is provide information for people about the rights that they have under the law. So our biggest concern with these DMV guidelines is the absence of any information here about people's rights under the law. And so the handbook as drafted focuses solely on your responsibilities in a traffic stop encounter without giving any of the kind of attendant details about what your rights might be in that encounter as well.
Well, let me stop there and ask Chief House about that. Should it include these new guidelines a little bit more about what our rights are?
Certainly from the perspective of the Chiefs Association, we didn't have any problem with adding that type of language. For example, you know, outside of actually handing police officer the driver's license so that he can run the information, you know, any questions beyond that, people really don't have to answer. So we don't have any objection to that. It's a right that they have, and they should know the right.
Suzanne, it would seem to me that if you get to the comply part of that, listen and comply part, if you're asked to give information that you aren't obligated to give, you're in a little bit of a bind when it comes to how these guidelines are worded.
Yep. I think that we were kind of reading several of the guidelines together to really be telling folks that they were required or suggesting to folks that they were required to answer an officer's questions during a traffic stop, even though they have the right not to beyond providing their driver's license and registration. And so that was concerning for us for sure.
What about the Chief House? I mean, if you know, you can see this gray area we're into. If you're saying, well, look, comply with this now and then complain later, but if the training is, whose responsibility is it to de-escalate the situation? Is it the motorist or is it the police officer?
Well, I think it's a shared responsibility. However, certainly it would fall within law enforcement to try to de-escalate that situation. And we've put together training throughout the state to help officers do that. I must admit that in years past, it just hasn't been a real strong suit. We do a lot of training with, firearms and vehicle pursuits and, other things. But how to sit down and just actually talk to somebody, we haven't done a great job of that. And so we, along with the North Carolina Training Standards Division, have really worked to change that and to put a lot more emphasis on de-escalation.
There was another concern I think the ACLU, Susanna, expressed, which is that this does seem to put the onus on the driver. And since the driver isn't really a professional when it comes to being stopped, whereas the police officer is, there's a sense that you do have some responsibility here, but the training can't follow. You can't be trained, you know, in the way a police officer must be. Is that part of the concern here?
Yeah, I think, the DMV is responding to a law that the legislature passed last year in drafting these guidelines. And so I appreciate where they are in this situation. But the fundamental flaw, I think, of this law and the resulting DMV guidelines is this idea that if people only knew how to act during a traffic stop, that would in and of itself solve the problem that it's trying to address here. But it's deeper than that. We all know it's deeper than that. And so should people be informed about what to expect in a traffic stop? Sure. But they should also be informed about their rights. And truthfully, we need to be having a much broader conversation about police responsibility and tactics in those interactions. And as Chief House mentioned, you know, that conversation includes things like how are law enforcement officers trained in implicit bias and how are they trained in de-escalation tactics? And what are their responsibilities to keep members of the community safe when they interact with them?
Well, you heard Chief House acknowledge all of that and say that the training it has not been there and that more has to be done. And he said more is being done. Chief, if you don't mind my recapping a little bit of what I heard you say. And I also heard you say, Chief, that as far as you were concerned, that wouldn't be a problem to include more language about rights. So where does this lie now? I know you sent a legislature, and you expressed your concerns to the legislature, Susanna, and the ACLU did as well. What kind of response did you get?
From the legislature, we lobbied for changes to the law as it was going through the lawmaking process last year, and were not successful in getting the changes that we wanted, which is why we have the DMV policy that we draft policy that we have now. But the DMV policy itself isn't final yet. And I think to Chief House's, acknowledgement that they would be okay with additional language. I think that there is room and time for additional language to be added. And so we know that the guidelines, the booklets haven't gone to the printer yet, and we're hopeful that we will have more comprehensive information about drivers' rights included along with the responsibilities here. And then, of course, also that this is just the beginning point of the broader conversation that we need to be having about police and community interactions and how we can all stay safe in those.
Chief House, I know that the DMV manual is hardly, you know, sort of a legal document in the sense that we're all to the extent that it tells us what the law says, yes, and that might be misconstrued by both police and drivers as having the force of law. In other words, could a police officer say, well, they weren't compliant, they didn't do what I asked them to, so therefore I was justified in taking that action? Are you worried that perhaps someone, a police officer, could point to this and be legally justified in using violence in a situation that frankly didn't require it?
You know, I wouldn't think so. I'd certainly see that perspective and see where, I'm not saying there would never be a police officer that would try to do that. But I think for the most part with the, you know, just the training that we're doing, and especially some of the programs that we're trying to put in place, to one being this public service campaign that we did a few years ago and are continuing to work on, you know, I think really that the police officers genuinely, they want to go home to their families too, and they really don't want to go in and escalate a situation unnecessarily. So, again, I can't say that there isn't a police officer in the world that wouldn't do it, but I really don't think that most officers would take that perspective.
Susanna, whether they did or not, is this something that could be used in court, or is this simply a DMV manual? How could my scenario actually play out in a court of law? Should there be a discussion or a case over the use of violence?
Perhaps, and I think for us, it's about what people's perception is going to be when you are a driver and you're looking over the handbook and it's telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing. To not have any information about what rights you may have under the law, you can't assert your rights unless you know what they are, and you can't preserve those rights for a later, court action unless you know what they are. And so it's, fundamentally, we think that it's really important that people know going into those interactions what they do and do not have to do under the law.
And as you say, this conversation is continuing, so that while we may see these in the new manual, the ACLU is going to continue to pursue this?
Yeah, we will continue to pursue some edits to this, and we will certainly be watching implementation.
And Chief House, would you be involved in that dialogue if this conversation continues beyond the publication of the current guidelines?
Yeah, absolutely. The Chiefs Association is very proactive. We work a lot with the ACLU and other groups to try to come to a mutually workable solution. So we would definitely want to be involved in those conversations.
Well, I want to thank you both for being part of our conversation today. Daniel House, Chief of Police in Wrightsville Beach, serves on the Governor's Crime Commission. Susanna Birdsong is a policy counsel from the North Carolina ACLU. Thank you both for being on our program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coming up, the music of Rachel Keel on The State of Things. Stay tuned.